RŠ intervju. Cenjeno poslušalstvo, poslušate RŠ intervju na Radiu Študent. Z nami so Chris, Alex, Rick in Shahjahan iz kultne indie-rockerske post-hardcore zasedbe Pile, ki bo nocoj gostovala na serialki Level Up v Channelu skupaj z domačimi Vsemag in belgijskimi Hejsa. Koncert se začne ob 20. uri, mi pa bomo na te točki prešaltali na angleščino. So, hi everyone, thank you for taking your time. Thank you for coming, and how you doing?
Doing all right. A little tired, but good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Coming directly from Bologna.
Yeah.
Yeah? How was the trip?
Smooth. Yeah.
Wanted to walk around a little.
Yesterday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Smooth. Yeah. Smooth sailing.
Yeah.
So you've been in Europe now for, this is like, which show is this in the lineup? Like, among the first ones, right? This
five.
Is like the first half?
Sure, yeah. Five, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you're also back in Slovenia after 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you like Slovenia? How do you like it here?
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's great. It's nice to be back. It's nice to be back here as well.
Yeah?
Yeah. Last time I was here, it was for holiday. So
really?
I liked it so much, I came just for fun. Yeah.
Nice. And Alex and Shahjahan, how do you find it so far?
This is my first time, I think.
Yeah.
Mine too, actually. So.
Yeah.
10 minutes, 15 minutes, so far so good.
So far so good.
We had some Borak, so that was really
delicious. Awesome. And you've mentioned before when we talked a little bit that you now have a Borak place in Boston as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pleasure to have it nearby. A little dangerous, but good.
Awesome. As are the best things, right?
Yeah.
So to start it off, a little bit about the music, maybe. The first part I have is a little bit titled, like, what changed? So you've been in the spotlight of the very first concert in this series, so the Level Up series, which started off in 8 years ago now. And since then, you have released 5 new albums, including the latest Sunshine and Balance Beams, which we will focus on in just a little while. But in these past 8 years, we can hear a little bit of a shift, like, away from this maybe old-school post-hardcore that defined your early work towards a little bit of a sort of blend, a technical, very dynamic, very evocative and emotional indie blend, even including in some of your works some drones, some experimentation later, and improvisation. But from the point of view of you guys, so right now you're not really the whole recording band. You have some members for the tour here. The lineup has changed, etc. But from the point of view of you guys as listeners and practitioners of Pile, what were some of the biggest changes in those last 8 years in your like understanding, and what drove them?
I mean, there's quite a few that have changed over the last 8 years. I think. The first of which was our first major lineup change. And so that, I had plans to like go into synthesizers and start experimenting a little bit more. But then when the lineup changed by about half, it didn't feel like the right time to do it. So we definitely leaned more into the rock side of things for a record. And then the pandemic happened. And that, I would say, was probably the biggest influence in a lot of what records came out in the following 3 years. Because, you know, I did like a solo record. There was the improvisational record. And those were, because we couldn't tour, because we couldn't perform like we had been the prior decade, it just sort of, we had to be creative and figure out how we were going to kind of keep things moving. And then this most recent record feels like it's just kind of taken everything that we have learned and tried to grow, the things that we've worked on the past however many years, and try to put that all into this one thing. So that feels like has gotten us to this point.
sort of a culmination of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can say for myself, I mostly do the same thing, but Rick's been playing a lot more with keyboards and synthesizers. Alex has always been a great keyboard player, and adding those elements in have changed a lot. And then both of these guys got into orchestration and strings and adding that to recordings that has evolved things over the last 8 years as well.
Mm. Yeah, as you've mentioned, Rick, you try to move a little bit more into synthesizers, perhaps. But what I find interesting is that still, as maybe Chris mentions, you kind of do the same thing. But there's also like I see this kind of a pile formula underneath it all. Like this, despite all of these innovations and additions, there's still this like classic proven method of just, you know, based on drums, guitars, vocals, you know, and. While this is a proven method, in like a case if we're speaking about rock music generally, in the case of Pyle, it still remains somehow innovative, fresh, new, ever-changing. And you combine so many influences from different genres, from different emotions, from different tensions. What would you say is the glue in your approach that manages to move the band forward while remaining distinct, finding this unexplored modulations in this very vast, but sometimes, let's face it, also boring world of modern guitar music? You know, how do you live it up? How do you add the extra?
I would say just a general curiosity with how to present some of the stuff. So, I mean, I like writing songs, and I think that there's most recently, I would say earlier on, the thing that I was most curious about was dynamics, just like how to present things, like something played quietly versus it being played loudly. Could be the same exact notes, but it means something totally different. And I think that an extension of that over the past 8 years or so is texture rather than dynamics, or in addition to dynamics. So something played on guitar is going to sound totally different than it played on bass, or versus played on a synthesizer, or played on Rhodes or strings, or it could be the same notes, but the way that it ends up presenting is different. So I would say that sort of curiosity of like, well then taking this song that could just have started with me on an acoustic guitar, what could it end up representing by choosing from these different options.
Exactly, and this texture-focused approach, I think, like, when I was listening to your latest record, it almost, despite, like, maybe the structures of songs being a little bit different, it almost reminds me of, like, a post-rock, of post-rock movement, like that typical 2000s sound, where it's so much based on texture and crescendos and emotion building up from, like, different instrumentation filling in. So is this the reason why you've also, like, been experimenting with strings, etc., on the new album?
Yeah, well, I'd say that the strings side of things, when we started doing that in 2017, I had a friend named Fuchsia who played viola, so that was like how that happened. But it's grown because of my relationship with Alex. I feel like that has changed. He's been knows a lot about orchestration, and that we've just had a lot of dialogue about the strings and how, like, what role they would take on the following records. And I feel like Green and Gray was the start of that. And that was more texturally, but it became more orchestration as time has gone on.
How do you approach, Alex, how do you approach, like, these ideas with, like, this orchestrating mind of yours? How do you approach them? How do you flesh them out?
Well, I love orchestral music because I really like the idea of a large amount of people playing together at the same time, and sections of them are the same instrument on the same part, some of them on the same instrument on different parts. There's the textures of woodwinds versus brass versus percussion versus strings versus range, like all the stuff. And then we all love movies, and that's a big part of that too, is how textures affect what's happening in front of you and how they are mixed together. Yeah, we've always been a fan of all that stuff. And then for the most recent record, Rick really was like, I want to do this. I want to go for it. So, yeah, like,
It all seems very like cohesive and thought out, and when you're listening to the record, it all kind of slots into place. And my question with regards to this this unity of the listening experience, how do you approach this when performing it live?
Well, I mean, I do think that everyone that's ever been a part of the Pile crew, from all the engineers we've worked with, to our front of house, Miranda, to everyone who's ever played, everyone loves cohesive art, whether it be television or books or music or movie. I feel like that's a common thread, is we all connect on vision and understanding why art affects us, like specific art affects us, and trying to explore that. And then, so live, you have, you know, 4 or 5 people working together who all love art in that way. It kind of works itself out, because like you all come to the table with the same expectation and the same love of art. And you have, we talk a lot. There's a lot of discussion on arrangements, dynamics, the sound itself with Miranda. We're a very communicative band.
Yeah, yeah, that I would say, like, communication has been a pretty key point to like keep things moving forward, and having all the experimentation stuff like be worked out as a group and discussed in a lot of ways before we like just experiment with something wild and put it on a record. And it's a lot of repetitive practice, experimentation together in a room. You know, we'll play songs many, many, many times before we go into the studio and work out different ideas. When we did Green and Gray, when we did All Fiction, you know, playing with a lot of synths, but we recorded most of those songs as guitar-based songs to see how they felt in a lot of ways. But then, like, change the instrumentation to see how that felt, and then see which of those sides like made sense to us. So it's kind of like focusing on the core of the song and how that moves and how it moves you and you're the listener, and picking out pieces that might enhance that.
So in a sense, like, the studio process also adds a lot to what the final like listening experience is, practically. So you kind of sketch it out on guitars, and then in the studio you kind of experiment with what's going to fill out the texture.
Well, I mean, we do all of it.
Yeah. It's true. And then once the record's done, if there's things that show up that weren't there when we were just performing the song, we have to figure out whether or not, when we go to play it live again, do we miss those things?
Yeah.
So if the strings aren't there, is it something that is lost, or is it something that just exists on the record and then we do it live a different way, and then that's okay? As long as it has some sort of impact, because that can happen too. It's like, if you add something on the recording, it's like, well, then something changes very dramatically with the song, potentially. And then we need to reapproach how we are playing that song in front of people, because if they're ready to hear it a certain way, it doesn't necessarily need to be the exact same thing, but there are certain expectations which you can either meet or you can subvert. But if it feels like it's this unintentional sort of falling flat, or that there's something lost, because there could be a moment that's really loud and really, you know, just this wide synth sound, but if I'm playing it very quietly on a guitar, that might be really nice as a listener to be like, oh, well, I had thought of it that way, and it creates a different environment. So it's about talking about whether or not we agree that that's the way to go forward with how the songs should sound.
So you also recontextualize it based on like whether you'd play in a venue like this or on a huge stage?
Sometimes. Yeah. I mean,
the thought occurs to us.
Yeah.
We haven't really dramatically altered the way we're going to perform things based on the stage size, because that can be somewhat not random, but not the easiest to plan for in succession if we're going to play on a tour. The idea is, like, if we're performing in front of people, we want that to be its experience, regardless of stage size. And I do think, you know, we've talked a lot in the past about how lighting and that can affect. And, you know, that is another step that we've talked a lot about and be interested in. It, sometimes that's mostly a matter of logistics and finance. But I feel like that is kind of a next step in what you're talking about, depending on the size of the room. And the
stage. Yeah. Like to put your music into different situations in a sense. But and when we're at this stage, maybe at live shows a little bit, and the latest album, what's your like most satisfying song to play live of the album?
I've been enjoying Meanwhile Outside.
That one is nice.
It is quite nice. I've been happy to play Born at Night.
Yeah. Regularly. They've all translated pretty well.
They have, yeah.
Oh, consistently fun. I don't know if there's been a time where I'm like, oh man, this song.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
I would say a Lucid Knot feels a good one, mainly because it feels like it does a lot of what the band has done well in the past with the quiet, loud dynamics and doing guitar stuff. And it's at an early point in the set where I can watch people start to get excited about what's happening. And there's also, for me personally, there's like nuance with the vocals that I can really lean into. So that is fun each night.
Yeah, I definitely, it is encouraging when we play that song to see people responding and like you said, really grasping what we're trying to, how we're trying to move them.
Okay, Boston.
What about you, Shaj?
I guess for me, I'm the new guy, by the way. I'm just filling in for a bit. These are very dear friends of mine, and I'm very proud of them. I've been a fan of theirs since they started, and it's like the ultimate thing for like a fan to get to play in a band with your friends, and they're also my friends, which is super cool. Just getting that all out of the way in case people don't know who the hell I am. But I think live probably Bouncing in Blue because of the way that it's so different from the record. And we had, I think, a couple of iterations in rehearsal about like maybe we'll do it this way or that way. And I was, you know, studying different videos that Rick had sent me. Maybe you played this part this way. And then I love the way that we settled on it. And I just like all the different places that it goes. And also, I think every night you can feel this, like, it's really one of those ones where the audience, like, doesn't, like, they all probably know, a lot of them know how the song goes. But then when it comes in, it's really just like, oh, man. So it's a lot of fun.
It's an awesome feeling, probably. Yeah. I think it's a very good point of the record, like also when it comes to Bouncing in Blue. I think it's a very nice. It puts the album together in a sense. I really like it. But as I'm mentioning the album, maybe also a little question that came to my mind. Perhaps into a little bit of a different direction, but. You've been working for years with the Exploding in Sound label, and the label was also very formative for the band in a sense, and with your release, and vice versa. but now you're releasing. There's a change. You're releasing at Super Records. So how come? How did this change come to be? How did you decide to?
We had worked with. Exploding in Sound since 2011, which is when Dan had approached us, and it's been great, and I really appreciate his approach to putting out records and his perspective on the industry. I think it came to a point for me of just I was doing a lot of work on the financial side of things, and there was some just differences in approach, and so just decided to look for other options and see what else might work, and we're still friends, still pals and stuff, but it just sort of became apparent that it might be helpful to try something different.
Yeah, this definitely feels a bit bittersweet because Dan is a close friend and he came to our show in New York a few weeks ago. But I think he understands as well. He's seen this with other bands on the label, which is like there may be things that he would like for us, but he may not want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And finding somebody that is more willing to do that will relieve us and maybe relieve him of the pressure from us to do that. So.
Which we did. I saw him. He's a very close friend as well. And I saw him right before we left. And he said, really enjoyed the record as a fan.
Yeah.
It was a very sincere thing. It wasn't like a, I liked it.
Right.
Like he enjoyed it as well.
It's really awesome.
He cares very deeply. And
very
the way he does business, things don't usually work out. So.
Okay. We were looking for a little more working out.
Yeah. But it's not because he doesn't care. He cares so very deeply.
Oh, extremely principled.
Yeah. Incredibly giving, too. He, like, gave things to us at his own expense often.
Still.
Yeah. Still. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We took advantage of it, but we do love him. We do love him.
But I guess it's now time for a mutual path forward, like in both directions.
And Super is run by people that we also know personally and knew before we started working with them. And they're great people, and we are getting more of an element of like the drive that Rick was definitely looking for. But we still have a connection where we can have a good conversation and reason with people. And we just toured for almost 2 months with one of the label owners as an artist as well. So, Namdi, shout out.
Okay.
Killer.
Okay. So, glad to hear this is like a nice situation going forward. But now I have a little bit of a different question. I have a little bit of a question about creativity and inspiration. And I'd like to kick it off with this. Let's say all of you keep all the knowledge and experience of thinking about music, of approaching music, of engaging with music, all the intricacies of interaction with the medium as an artist, but you lose all of your technical instrumental ability. And now, which instrument would you, with this knowledge in mind, pick to choose from, to learn from scratch?
Well, piano.
Okay, a universal nod there.
Okay. Piano. Probably say the same, but
yeah.
Piano. Everyone piano. I did not expect that. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. It does it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do it all. Does. Strings, percussion. It's got it all.
So, do you all know how to play the piano? Or no?
Everyone does a little bit.
Yeah.
I've seen you all play.
Fortunately, it's laid out as a keyboard, so
I'm a piano player, and they all can play. Rick is definitely the most proficient, but they know what's going on.
Yes.
So would you do a old piano tour?
Oh yeah. Yeah, if we had people that would carry the piano.
Only four grid.
Can be in a square setup.
For 80.
Don't tease me.
Or organs and pianos.
Organs and pianos.
Oh yeah. Man.
Stacks on stacks, you know.
Right. Residency at Orgel Park.
Oh man, don't tease me again. Incredible.
But another question from this, maybe a little inquisition into creativity as well. Do you feel like a necessary part of your creative music process is also the dimension of interacting with people, so touring, recording, releasing, engaging with the scene? Or would you guys be perfectly content with you and your ideal circle of bandmates being given the ideal perfect studio in a picturesque middle of nowhere to endlessly and boundlessly create till the rest of your lives?
I think it's the relationship between the two.
Yeah.
Always been there for me. It's like
much of one thing.
Yeah.
When I started playing music, it was because I didn't connect with other people. So that was a place I could go. But having that as a means to connect with people. So having the place to be alone with it and that creativity and to be able to experiment safely and to have that be to find that there, but then to bring that to other people and feel connected is like a very grounding thing. So I don't think one would be, it couldn't exist without the other.
Yeah, not for me. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. I feel like we tried the essentially for a short period of time when we lived in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
We tried. We had a studio in the back, and before All Fiction, the 2023 record, we recorded for a month. I felt like I went a little crazy, and I feel like I like that stuff the most. And I don't, without the community, it feels all kind of meaningless. Mm-hmm. Even though that a perfect studio is like a wonderful experience.
Sure.
Totally.
I think that's why the releasing that record was so, there felt, for me personally, like a lot riding on that, because it was a lot of trying new things and like, yeah, like going to try out something different and wanting it to really connect with people. So, I don't know. I do like that of just like closing off from the world and just working on something.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But I think sharing that also is...
So, of course, this interaction, right, between the two, so always interaction with the scene, with the people. And in this sense, do you see your creative endeavors as sort of attempts to portray your own navigations of, let's call it, the modern human condition and showcase it to the world, in a sense?
Yeah, some deep questions.
Yeah, man.
It's a good question. Yeah.
Okay. In this sense, I'm also interested with specifically Sunshine and Balance Beams. How does all of this like culminate? All of this like approaches, creative approaches, because the album feels, in my opinion, when it comes to at least lyrics, themes, soundscape, textures, very heavy with themes of resignation, with themes of loss of control, and coming to terms that some sort of relief might never arrive, or etc. And what do you guys think? Does it reflect? Does it reflect some kind of general tension of an uneasy contemporary life, the absurdity of precarity?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's pretty much it. I mean, I think that so much. I mean, especially. And I still think about this pretty often, but just especially in American life, if you start a business or any sort of enterprise, any endeavor, the idea is that it grows infinitely, even though there's no reality wherein that would be, where that would exist, where it would just grow endlessly. So to hit a point where it just stays there, or even shrinks, or any of that, what happens then? What happens when you've been told that this is the way things are supposed to go, and then they no longer go that way? That's either you keep fighting against it forever and ever and ever, or you accept it and you just see the situation for what it is, and that is the end of it. Regardless of, you may have your opinions on it, but just to see it for it's, well, it's growing, or it's getting smaller, or whatever it is, it's staying right where it is. Some sort of acceptance is the only way to find any kind of peace, even if that peace is like in the face of uncertainty.
It's the soundtrack to American neoliberalism in decline.
Let's hope so.
I mean, that's part of it. I would say that's part of it. I mean, it's. I think that, yeah, part of the American dream is like you can do whatever you want, and it's like that's what you're told, but that's not. That's just not the reality.
And making music through the realization, for me at least, of being part of a creative endeavor turned into also part of an industry, and realizing that, like any industry, it's extractionary from everything around it. So it's like pulling away from all the other aspects. So that realization was also heavy on my mind through the process as well.
Let me just check, how are we with the time? How are we? We're still good? Yeah.
Okay,
I'm getting mixed signals, but I will take them in a positive light. So the last time you've been here, when we're speaking about the political climate, the decline or whatever, the stagnation, the last time you've been here was also during the Trump administration, and now we have another Trump administration. The political climate hasn't really changed in any sense. It has maybe even worsened or sharpened or gotten a little worse, from the point of view of you as Americans, probably. But I was thinking of... In the light of this, what is the message of Sunshine and Balance Beams, is it trying to negotiate some sort of hope for something better, for a change, or is it more of a message of moving forward through acceptance of how things are?
I struggle with that daily.
I would say it's moving forward with acceptance. I think hope is, that's a nice, it's a nice comfortable thing to have, but that doesn't necessarily protect you or prevent anything from worsening. Yeah, I would say acceptance is a part of it. And there are, you know, like, the, that's not to say that, that it's just like, it's all bad and that needs to be accepted, because I think that there are moments of joy and happiness and all of life. Like, it's not just one thing.
Yeah.
But I think accepting it and seeing it for what it is.
I think we've entered, particularly this year, we're kind of in like a post-hope world. Hope is a very specific word.
That's good.
It doesn't imply belief. Like, you can have belief in people and principles and things and whatever, but hope is kind of like this airy word that, like, it'll work out. And, like, I feel like we were, at least my childhood, it was raised a lot on hope. I feel like my parents are from a generation of hope. It doesn't mean that they don't work hard, they don't understand realities of capitalism and all sorts of stuff, but it is very, like Rick was saying earlier, like, yeah, you believe there's a path, and you're told there's a path, and if you climb the ladder, blah, 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 but, like, and that, to me, is closer to hope. And I think with the internet and how access to information and stuff like that, like, hope is not really... And I know how pessimistic that sounds, which I do mean, but I also, like... There are other words that I feel are more practical.
I think through acceptance, one can get to, like, direct action and actually doing something about it. And I think through that, you can just see your own actions as towards the end of a better world rather than simply just hoping for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hope is very passive.
It is.
Which we, again, I feel like it's probably always been this way, but this year in particular, it is not that way.
Hope is a very 60s feeling.
It is.
It is. So in a post-hope, post-rock...
Post-hope, post-rock.
That's maybe I'm going to start
post-music. This
post-music. Maybe this can be the tagline for, the tour. But when it comes to the tour itself, what have you guys been listening to while traveling?
All sorts of stuff.
The radio.
That's actually one of my favorite parts, is I feel like you put on the radio in every country that we go to.
I don't
to.
Know if I've put on anything other than the radio in the last 3 months.
Yeah, even in the U.S.
It's interesting. There's some weird stuff. Yeah. And some great stuff, yeah.
And some bad stuff.
And some bad stuff, yeah. And a lot of American stuff that feels weird to hear. Everyone has their thing.
Listening to, was it American Woman last night?
Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah, a couple Lenny Kravitz songs.
Yeah, really. I think making fun of Lenny Kravitz has been a pretty good song.
Yeah, he's consistent. Not a good guitar player. Like, he's billed as such, but he's not.
Then we all agree we've had POD stuck in our heads.
That's true.
Well, that rules.
That's true. Yeah. But yeah, Shaz, everybody's put on something a little different.
I think today I was putting on some random up. Like a Sumatran compilation. There's this label, Sublime Frequencies, that puts out different psychedelic music from around the world. Then comedy podcasts.
On
my on headphones, I've been listening to the last Mark Hollis record. He's the singer of Talk Talk. And then I listened to that Keith Jarrett.
You listen to Korn concert?
Live at Korn. Not the whole thing, because we stopped driving, but I was listening to that.
That's all improvised.
That's crazy. I mean, you can kind of
see the last one. That's the one that where it's at.
You can kind of, I mean, you can hear him warming up too. It's crazy.
And yelling and screaming.
Yeah.
That's his thing. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like the group listening environment, and now because it's 2025, we all have our environments too. You know, it's time to retreat.
But let's say it's a party. Who gets the aux?
Well, the other night,
it was a big party. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Alex has like a 7-hour sing-along playlist.
It's just bangers.
Oh, yeah.
40s to now.
Bangers and bangers.
Yeah, that's our house playlist.
But we got a request from the club the other night in Switzerland, and we put on Tropical Fuckstorm, and that ended up playing for 4 hours, man.
Yes, we love that band.
Nice. So we're kind of at the end here with the time, but is there anything else maybe you'd like to mention to our listeners?
Very nice.
Thank you guys for a
hopeful post-hope interview.
in this world of post-hope, it's a hopeful interview, or what?
Yeah. No, it's always meaningful, you know, when somebody takes the time to really
truly thoughtful.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for taking the time and for coming here and for this opportunity to talk with us at Radio Student.
Yeah.
And pretty much, these were Chris, Alex, Rick, and Shah Jahan from Pile. And they're playing tonight at Channel Zero. And Coy v Klubu Channel Zero ob 20 uri igrajo Semak, Heisa in Pile. And that's it. Thank you, guys.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Era este interview.